So sit right down, relax, and open ears up real wide and say, give it to me straight, Poppin' Joe. I can take it. The final
countdown. How do you slow him down?
How do you, the same way you slow me down. Well, you can't.
Now, your Poppin' Joe podcast experience begins.
And we are into the finals, finally, if that's the way to say it.
Finally, geez.
Finally the finals. And how you doing today, Joe?
I'm doing all right. Not a bad day outside. Can't wait to get out of here and enjoy some weather.
Should be nice, should be nice. You're listening to the Poppin' Joe podcast. How's everybody else doing in the radio world today? We're off of the Stanley Cup Finals, first game.
Very fantastic game to watch, I have to say.
I unfortunately was busy. I only caught the third period. I have things called children that I had to watch their beloved baseball game last night.
I rewatched the game, actually, after I went to go watch the Entourage movie personally. So I caught up on the highlights and watched like the game in like 45 minutes, game in an hour, and it was really intense. Good effort on the Tampa Bay Lightning, but they kind of went the polar opposite of what you were saying was going to be their key factor in potentially being the better seed coming out of the East, in that they're going to be the offensive juggernaut who could, you know, blow out the Western Conference team they were going to face. But, you know, trying to go down and win a game 1-0 against the Chicago Blackhawks, probably not the right choice.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. It's, you know, it's like playing keep away with your big brother. You know, you can keep it away for as long as you can, but when it gets to that final bell at the end, ding, Chicago came in and just went, no, game one is ours. And sure enough, 6 minutes left to go, they did the dirty.
I think what was interesting, too, is when you saw the game being won by Chicago, it was by two players that you wouldn't necessarily think would be the game breakers for the Blackhawks. I mean, having Antoine Vermette score the game winner, I mean, that guy's just been, he's been completely on and off and mostly off the entire time he's been a Blackhawk. But the goals he scored in the Stanley Cup playoffs, I think he has three game winners and he has three goals. So he's been fantastic for them, I guess, when they need him the most, when guys like Kane, Taves, and Sharp, and Seabrook, and Hossa, and Keith, and I can keep going.
You
know,
exactly.
Don't show up. And that kind of sucks even more for the Lightning. I mean, good on them, but when you hold all those guys off the scoreboard, I think the only guy who got an assist was Keith, and you still lose, it's got to hurt.
Oh, that's, as I said, it's certainly demoralizing. I was going to use, you know, deflating, but that's for another sport. It's certainly demoralizing. I mean, because from what I've seen and from what I've heard, Chicago certainly didn't even come close to playing their best game. And if you're ever going to win a game against the Blackhawks, they pretty much have to not be playing their best game. And they didn't.
And they still won.
And they still won.
That's what sucks.
And, you know, you talk to the people around here, you talk to people in the NHL, one out of every 30, same, said the Lightning prior to the series. One out of every 50, maybe, said the Lightning.
Yeah.
Certainly look like it's being written the way everybody expects it to go. And I hope that doesn't make for a boring Stanley Cup, because I don't want to take anything away from either teams. But, you know, we didn't see it before game one. Certainly don't see it after. I can't see how the Lightning can recharge and come back and, you know, take a game, let alone try and win a series.
I like the pun, Lightning recharge. That was well done.
I was practicing that one.
Well done. For me, I kind of saw this going this way anyways. I said the Blackhawks in five, and a lot of people are like, no, like at least six, like at least. I'm like, no, it's more like at least four. Because worst comes to worst, I don't think Tampa has the game to compete with the Blackhawks, and I think you see that they were being outclassed. And not because they are not one of the best teams in the NHL, but because they are not the best team in the NHL. I think that's going to be the toughest thing for Tampa to be able to get over, because I think they're going to give their best and play the best game they have. And ultimately, I don't think it'll be anywhere close to being enough. Because when you really look at the Blackhawks, you really think they can score with the best of them, because I do. I mean, goaltending, you have the same question mark in both nets, but granted, I would take Crawford with a cup and a guy who should have won the Conn Smythe the year they won the cup last time. And then you look at Tampa, they're just a little young. And, I mean, maybe you could, maybe you have a better opinion of this on, than me. Well, granted, he thinks he has a better opinion.
It's an age thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but maybe you have a different opinion, sorry. I look at Tampa's route to the Cup Final, and I don't see them facing anyone as ready as Chicago. And I don't know if you see the, a team there that does. I think the Rangers were close, but I don't feel like the Rangers have enough scoring touch to completely equal what they're facing off of Chicago.
But let me rephrase this in another way for you, because I think you're onto something here, but I don't think it's this grandiose piece of knowledge that is going to shock the world. The Tampa Bay Lightning play in the East.
Yeah.
There is no path for them to take. You know, I'm sure we get into the NBA Finals, but, you know, everybody's criticizing the Cavaliers for the path that they had. Well, who else was in the East for them to face that was a, of any competition? The one thing that I do see, and as much as we feel that the Blackhawks are going to win in 4 or 5 or something of that nature, there's not going to be, it's not like there is such a huge difference in skill level or talent level between the two. That breakaway, if he scores and Lightning go up 2-0, there's a chance they win the game. There's a good chance that they win the game.
Right.
And it's that close of a series, except whenever it comes down to all those big plays, the majority of them are going to be won by the Blackhawks because they've been there before. They've done that. You know, they're down 1-0 for 54 minutes. Who cares? Ho-hum. They're patient. They're ready. They're experienced. And all of a sudden, they rattle off 2 goals from people we can't even pronounce their names.
Yeah, Teuvo Teravainen and
I still Antoine say Vermette. Like, I mean, we're arguing how to pronounce the names because they're such, I'm not going to say they're nobody, but they're never.
They're unknowns right now. Yeah, absolutely. They're never talked about. Especially Teravainen, yeah.
Right? So, exactly. And I think that those clutch moments that happen throughout a game, Chicago is going to dominate those clutch moments. And that's what's going to win it for them and make it appear easy when it isn't as easy as maybe we're making it out to be.
Right. I mean, I see your point. And, like, I'm not blaming Tampa. Not like, I'm not saying Tampa shouldn't be there.
Oh, no.
I know, yeah.
I'm just saying they didn't have enough preparation to
right.
face a team like Chicago.
And I think that's the key. I think that is the exact word for it. Because when you watch the Western Conference, whenever you see the Western Conference champion in the finals, you look at all their series beforehand, and you're like, man, those were better than the Cup Final.
They're battle ready.
Yeah, exactly. You're completely battle tested. And I think that's where you made the great point where, realistically, when you look down that lineup, okay, I understand Tyler Johnson's a newer commodity. But in this playoffs, he's been as dominant and as skillful as Patrick Kane. He doesn't have the same amount of skill, but in the playoffs, he's been just as solid. Stamkos against Taves, I mean, granted, Taves because of the leadership aspect I would take, but if you give me either or, I'm not going to be sitting here really complaining.
No, exactly.
But when you look at what a team like Chicago or what a team like LA or even, sadly, Anaheim, what they need to get through to get to the Cup Final, it almost makes the Cup Final look like a cakewalk. I mean, when Anaheim won the Cup, they went San Jose, Anaheim, Chicago, Stanley Cup. That's ridiculous. They beat 4 potential Cup contenders that year.
Yep.
And they took the New York Rangers, I think, went to 6 or 7. But still, it didn't seem like it was a very tough 7 series for them. And that's what sucks for Tampa Bay. I mean, they're not grizzled yet, and I don't think you'll ever find that in the East.
I know, and it's funny. It's only been one game, and certainly anything can happen in hockey. We have already written them off. We've
Absolutely.
Already written the Bolts off.
Absolutely.
And you know what?
Lightning doesn't strike twice.
Oh.
So they have 1 Stanley Cup. I apologize,
Tampa. I was about to say where you had that one in your notes somewhere. And you know what? There's still obviously a chance. There's always a chance in hockey to come back and take a series. But I tell you this, what I'm watching this playoffs for is, and what the Tampa Bay, they still have to come out and play as hard as they can, because this isn't about winning the Cup in 2015. This is them getting battle tested for next year.
Right.
And that's what, you know, they need to take out of this, because if they just back down and cave down, then getting this far wouldn't have provided the amount of fruit that it can. They can get something out of this even when they don't win the Cup. And that is that experience. That is that battle tested. And that's what they need to keep fighting.
So do you think game 2 is must win? Because that's what the talk has been around town, is that game 2 for the Lightning is a must win. You can't go to Chicago down 2.
they couldn't go down to Chicago, down one. I mean, I mean, the only chance they had was winning both opening games. To me, the series is already over.
Really?
So
I agree, though.
You know, it's one of those things. I'd hate to see. I still want to see an entertaining game. I still want to see them come out. But I don't think. I think Chicago is going to pull a whole series, what they did in Game 7 to Anaheim. I mean, boom, boom, two quick goals, boom, boom, two quick games.
Right.
And then it's just going to ride the way back, you know. They might even lose a game because of that fact.
See, it'd be interesting because I know looking at Chicago, they're either going to really want this sweep. Usually I'm the guy that believes Game 4, if a team is up 3-0, is the hardest game to win because you have so many games to win. Like, you can just sit there. You can have an off night. You know you can have an off night. But their two Stanley Cups have come away. So the Blackhawks still haven't won.
At home?
At the Madhouse in Madison.
And to add to your point, I think it becomes doubly tough when that game four is in your building. Because if you lose that game and then you go away to game five.
You're like, screw it. I'm just going to come back for game six and win here.
And then all of a sudden, game seven, anything can happen. No, I see. Like I said, the fear is there. And the only thing that, and I think maybe we're on the same level, we haven't said it yet, but I think the only thing that's going to stop Chicago from winning the Stanley Cup is Chicago.
100%.
You know, in terms of and we already saw game one. There is a bit of a letdown, but they still managed to come up. Hopefully they, you know, don't allow that to continue to happen. And any team that has captained by, you know, Captain Serious, Captain Crunch, Captain Clutch, whatever you want to call it, Taves, Chicago's not going to have two bad games in a row.
Yeah, I mean, looking at that finals, it really does remind me of the NBA finals in that you have the Golden State Warriors that literally are Golden State's Warriors. I mean, they fight a solid game. They're not one-dimensional, but you know who leads that team. They have multiple players that are able to be clutch. They have multiple talented stars versus, you know, the LeBron, you know, vis-a-vis the Stamkos, with a cast of guys that are nowhere near as talented as him. But very good. I mean, granted, Kyrie Irving is fantastic, but you could make the same comparison to a guy like Tyler Johnson or Victor Hedman. But then after that, I mean...
But, well, Irving is hurt, right? I mean, he's...
But it's been like 100 days since they played last. He should be fine now.
He's not 100%. He's still not 100%. We know Love is out. And you're right. There is a cast there around LeBron that says,
I know.
You know, it makes you question it.
And it's like a top three and then a bottom nine. You know, like, oh, yeah, they'd be all right.
You have to have somebody like a Dellavedova be as pesky as he is and borderline, you know, flagrant foul territory kind of thing for them to be successful. Tristan Thompson has to continue to outperform in terms of what any expectations
for him. He's been outstanding.
He's been fantastic.
I have to say, like, he's had a good couple years, but he's always seemed like the big man who's small and he's too big to be small.
And too small to be big.
Exactly. Yeah. And in this playoffs, I mean, he's taking a complete next level jump. And I haven't seen a guy be that committed to rebounding in a very long time. I mean, he knows his game. And it's very refreshing to see a younger guy who, not struggled, I don't think struggling is the right word, but I guess didn't develop as quickly as they thought.
Well, he wasn't expected to go as high as number four, which he did. And you know what? Kudos to the Canadian.
Yeah, fantastic.
I mean, he in this playoff year, contract year, he's just wrote himself a nice check.
Oh, yeah.
And deservedly so.
Absolutely.
For first performance. But again, you look at it, and it is LeBron's team. And I think we're heading into the same direction here in terms of the Blackhawks Lightning. Your prediction?
On this one?
On this one.
I'm going to give the Warriors it in six. And that's only because, unlike the NHL, a superstar can get you one or two. And I know LeBron can get you at least two. So I'm taking the Warriors in six.
For me, it's even five.
Yeah,
again,
I don't mind that.
Yeah, you don't see it. And what I break it down is into a couple of things. It really is LeBron and his team alone.
Right.
I mean, there really isn't that much around him. This year, with the way the injuries are, Vergeau, he's hurt too,
no,
right?
He's still out.
He's still, like, I mean, there's just nobody around. Which... Getting to the finals itself is something. And again, it probably has to do to a weak East or a really good coach. Sorry, I had to get that in there because I know you keep calling Blatt a babysitter.
He's a babysitter. The best around.
If they win a game or two,
yeah,
then you have to give him his due.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
Okay, what if they win it, based on a matchup and LeBron having a bad game, I agree. If LeBron has a bad game and they're able to win a game in the championships and he's like throwing out a matchup, I'll give him that.
Let me ask you.
But LeBron's going to get 35 and they're going to win. Like that's what's
last
10 happen.
Years, last 10 years. Name me one champion, one championship team that was won because of just one player.
Ooh. Well, I don't know. You can't really get one player.
Exactly. So right now, what we're saying is that Cleveland is one player.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So again, when I think the closest might be Dirk Nowitzki, but he had Chandler was really
good. And Jason
good.
Terry was unreal then. He was a wicked shooter.
I mean, there's other things, but I think that's the closest we get to it.
Yeah.
And Dirk wasn't even at LeBron status kind of thing. But again, that to me, if they do the matchup as a coach. Now, the reason why I think Warriors are going to roll over them is because Warriors don't have one person that they can put on LeBron James.
They got three or four. Yeah.
You know, Harrison Barnes, excellent defender. Iguodala, excellent defender. Draymond Green, they can put him at times. And by doing this, you're not going to shut LeBron out. LeBron's going to get his 20, 30 points. Guaranteed. But because they don't have to necessarily double-team LeBron every single time he touches the ball, that means now you have people covering the wings. You have people on Kyrie Irving who doesn't get and Dellavedova who don't get those three-point open looks because they are better covered.
Right.
And that's what's going to kill the Cavaliers. I think they're at read a stat, 24% of their shots were open looks.
Yeah.
That's huge. I don't think they're going to get that. I don't think that's why they're going to be able to keep up with the Warriors.
I think the Warriors' ability to be able to completely cover the floor is going to be their reason why they'll dominate LeBron and the Cavs. Like you're saying, he won't have as easy a job, but what's underrated about LeBron James is his playmaking ability. And I was listening to Tyler Ennis speak on the radio, and he was saying the biggest problem with LeBron James is you know you can't shut down LeBron James, so you just don't try that. That's stupid. You let him get his points. Here's the problem. You got to shut down LeBron James also being a playmaker.
Yeah.
And he was saying that's probably the toughest thing to do because he's able to think beyond where even your D's going. However, I feel like the Warriors have the ability to be able to lock him down and potentially take that gamble on, okay, LeBron, you want to drop 45? By all means, but they're not going to shoot over like 35% otherwise.
Then we're going to beat you like 98 to 47.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. And I think that's the one thing that's helpful for LeBron in having Kyrie Irving back. Whether he's injured or not, you're going to have to pay him some respect. That might help out the teams, I guess, transition or even game while, you know, they're setting up their half-court offense. But I totally agree with you. I mean, it's a 1-9, 1-10 team in Golden State. They just keep throwing a guy off the bench. He goes and gets his 10 and his 8 rebounds, goes and sits down. Next guy walks up, he gets 10 and 4 assists, sits down. So, it's tough for them.
And you reverse that, right? In the sense of, you know, you have a number of people that can stop LeBron James. On the reverse side, again, who are you going to stop? I mean, we've been talking about the NBA for a good 5-6 minutes. We're talking about the NBA Finals for a good 5-6 minutes. We've been talking about LeBron James, Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Warriors, and we haven't even mentioned Steph Curry's name.
Oh, wow. Well.
Right? And, like, I mean, that you almost feel like we've out-talked about him.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The truth of the matter is if you're going to get LeBron stopping Steph, which I don't think he's going to be covering, I mean, who's going to cover Steph Curry? Who's going to cover Klay Thompson? You know, who's going to cover Bogut? Like, they just have so many options that I don't think the defense is there unless Black comes out with an incredible defensive scheme.
Yeah,
and that's where I'm going to go
with the best one. But then LeBron will just switch the play, so it won't even work.
Oh, yes, we'll see. But, yeah, no, I have to agree with you. It's going to be a landslide, I think, anyways. And the only thing that I have in favor for Cleveland is LeBron James. I mean, that's really the only thing. And he's such a big force that you have to acknowledge the fact.
Well, I guess
that's
the argument, right? You just never bet against the biggest horse in the race.
No.
But if all other 9 are running against that one, sooner or later you think the 9 are going to come ahead. And that's, I think, the biggest problem for the Cavs. It's just LeBron. And even still, I mean, if they were healthy, if you literally had the big 3, in, you know, LeBron, Love, and Irving, I'd say this would go seven for sure.
And it would be a phenomenal matchup to watch.
Right, right. But in this case, that's the one-headed monster against the Splash Bros and company.
Can you imagine, though, in the next 2 weeks, if we're back here talking about the Bolts and the Cavs winning? Like, I mean...
Yeah, we'd look so stupid.
Well, no, but I didn't look so stupid. Because I don't think we're alone in terms of the way we've been doing this. I mean, the sports world would just be up in arms. I mean, I think this would be two of the greatest, you know, unforeseen championship victories
right.
in a long time in either sport. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe we're in for an interesting 2 weeks.
Definitely. Definitely. I really do think so.
Which would lead to a summer of activity.
Yeah.
Or sports. And we heard an interesting little tidbit of information. And I just want to throw this out there because, you know, we'll go back to hockey. And our beloved buds.
Yeah.
The Toronto Maple Leafs.
You mean the Babcocks.
The Babcocks.
Toronto Babcocks.
The Toronto Red Wings. There's a rumor out there that I heard two rumors, and I haven't read the second one yet, about the Leafs giving away their fourth pick.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I also heard that they're trying to possibly acquire the fifth pick in the draft.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I mean, this is the second time I've heard this deal. I've heard it, the first time was, apparently, it was Kessel, Kadri, and the third for the fifth and Semin. Apparently.
So you said the third?
The third rounder.
Okay, third rounder.
For Semin and their first. Apparently, Kessel's got a lot more value than that, and Semin doesn't have any. And neither does apparently Jeff Skinner, because the trade apparently is looking, I'm not saying it's happening, but the rumor is that the Leafs would offer up anybody over the age of 23, which I guess would just keep any draft picks, including Morgan Riley, off the trading block. Most people assume it's more so a list of players that are over 23, and the Leafs' 24th pick in the draft they got from Nashville.
Right, a first round.
For Friends and Santarelli. And then the Leafs would be getting Skinner, Semin, and the fifth pick in the draft, which would guarantee the Leafs two out of the three in Strom, Marner, and Hanifin.
Correct. And the person over the age of 23, we had a bit of a discussion. We probably narrowed it down to a few. I mean, it might be Kessel. Obviously, he's the most skilled, most talented player the Leafs have. But he also has a big contract, and Kadri would be the other choice that we were thinking that possibly be that. He's not under contract, though, so...
He's got the 1 year left as a restricted, so he's arbitration eligible this year also.
Right. So the Leafs, I mean, might be able to strike a deal with Kadri to sign him and then do us like a sign-and-trade kind of thing, if that's what...
I guess.
Sure they'd be talking to the Hurricanes first and foremost about that. But I look at the situation and go, you know, why would they want to make this trade? Because it looks, from my perspective...
Carolina, you're saying?
From Carolina.
Yeah.
Because it looks, from my perspective, if I'm the Leafs, it's like, where do I sign? Let me sign right now. I'll do this hands down. But Semenov has what kind of a contract?
Semin's $7 million a year until 2018.
Which, again, for the Leafs, something they can absorb.
Right.
And 3 year to rebuild kind of puts that... expiry at a good time for the Leafs.
Sure, absolutely.
And Skinner's got some health issues?
Skinner's got a couple concussions, and if I'm not mistaken, he had one back injury. Don't quote me on the back injury, but I'm pretty sure about the concussions. I would say, you know, you hitting the nail on the head with Nazem Kadri being the option for Carolina, only because it doesn't seem to make sense that they would trade. I think Skinner makes around four and a half. So let's just ballpark him at 4.5 and then say compare, you know, you put the two together, him and Semin, that's like 11.5 mil.
Right.
I don't think they're going to go and get a guy who's $8 million to save $3 million.
Correct. Especially when you're only getting one player back out of.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas I think if you were to go and get Nazem Kadri, essentially give him the same deal as Jeff Skinner. And now, you know, I am not a big fan of Nazem Kadri as a hockey player. I don't see the development in him. But in comparison to Jeff Skinner, talent-wise, they're very similar. The thing with Kadri is you can see sometimes in his game he has flashes of physicality that if you can get that out of him, he'd be a solid second option. And especially in this case, he'd be a third option because you have Stahl, and then Kadri. So ultimately, I think they would rather clear the cap space to get Kadri, keep their $7-8 million. So the deal would work for them, I guess, as a salary crunch and save some money.
And they have, if I'm not mistaken, a bunch of kids anyways. Like, yeah. It's not, I mean, not
they're pretty bare, though. It's, you know what? It was a couple years ago. I know what you're talking about when they had, like, Justin Falk and Jeff Skinner and they had a couple other, Brian Murphy. But not many of them are coming around. That's, I think, the biggest problem for them.
So, yeah, I still don't know in terms of if it makes complete sense for them. But again, from a Leafs perspective...
No, it's a fantastic deal from a Leafs perspective.
I think you go for it. I mean, you already know everybody on your team is pretty much expendable anyways.
Right.
And you want to rebuild, and you're going to get two top five draft picks and a draft that is very solid.
Yeah, exactly. And then fill two needs at the same time.
A defenseman and a centerman?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That would be something if they can pull that off. That would almost get me thinking... Do we speed this up? No, I'm just kidding. I can't. No.
You know what? When you really think about that deal, if you don't move a Kessel, right, does it not speed it up a little? I mean, if you're going to be, your top six would be Kessel, Van Riemsdyk, Bozak, Lupul, Skinner, Semin. That's a lot of talent.
You still need, number one, 2 years at least for the kids to come up. Oh, I think, right? At least, you know, 2 years for them to develop. They're not going to be. I don't think they're going to be a McDavid that can jump into the NHL right away. But I do believe that your Mr. Babcock can get something out of Semin that hasn't been gotten before. He's that kind of coach. And if you look, I think, in his past year, he had a lot of... did not play. Semin couldn't even crack the team. And I think that has more to do with attitude. Because I think he got 42 points in 46 games, which, not bad. Not bad in terms of production. You just got to clear his head. And I think that's something like a Mike Babcock can do. So, yeah, I do think there's the potential of it speeding up. But I still think you're looking at a couple of years down the road.
I mean, there's been flashes of times where Alexander Semin with Washington was their best player and their most talented. And they were saying... a couple years ago, actually more than a couple, they were talking to Olaf Kolzig once he returned with the organization, and they said to him, you know, like, who's the hardest shot or the best shot you've ever seen? He's like, Alex Semin. He's the best shooter I've ever had to deal with. And this is a guy who was at the time had played 1 or 2 years against Ovechkin, played against Crosby. He's played against Gretzky, Lemieux, you know, Sundin. He's played against stars. And the guy said, yeah, Alex Semin. Funny enough, I think the reason why Semin is the most interesting is because Semin would lead to the Leafs' new philosophy, which would be he has great possession numbers.
The numbers, analytics?
Yeah, I know, right? Okay, Raggy. But yeah, apparently he's got great possession numbers. I mean, yeah, the guy hogs the puck and he doesn't pass, so there you go, possession. But if you think about the, you know, prototypical Mike Babcock stud player, high possession, wicked skill set, not overly physical, but knows how to control the play, a la Alex Semin. I'm not saying it would be a match made in heaven, but it might just not be a match made in hell.
No, exactly. I think, like I said, it's something we can work with, and it's something we can work with because, quite frankly, whether he turns out to be a stud or stud muffin, whether he's good or crap, the one thing that the Leafs have that the Hurricanes don't is they really don't care about the next 2 years or 3 years anyways.
Yeah.
So whatever happens, happens. You know, and like I said, if it's part of getting 2 out of 3 of those draft picks, hands down. Give them 2 players.
Right.
Give them Kessel and Kadri.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like one of those things like, hey, we can build around something like that and move forward. So hopefully we'll end up seeing about that.
Now, there's one apparent wrinkle in that deal is that it's based around Arizona drafting Dylan Strome. So,
why?
Because Dylan Strome, I think, and many believe, that know a lot more than me, is the number one center in this draft that everyone is coveting. Because you know 1 and 2 are gone. To me, when I really think about it, and this might be like, it might be a slap in the face, but it's not what I meant to do it as. But I think Dylan Strome is the beginning of the draft. I don't think 1 and 2 even matter. three is to me a de facto number one draft pick. It's a number one overall pick.
I think what you're saying is that three is the first time you
don't actually, know who's getting drafted.
You actually have to think about it.
Exactly.
If you're drafting.
Right.
Right.
So
David Eichel, guaranteed, and they deserve to be absolutely in those 1-2 positions. But it's three where you start going,
Right.
Yeah.
And when you look at the numbers between a guy like Dylan Strome and Mitch Marner, they're separated by 3 points in the OHL scoring. And it's not like one of those times where you get an overager who's like 20 years old, who's already physically stronger than all the 17-year-olds, who gets 120 points. These guys are 18. Like, freshly 18. So, he had 129 points, and a lot of those points came without Connor McDavid. And I think that's what gave Dylan Strome that extra step when everybody was looking at him, when they're scouting him, because it's just the old adage, you know? Like, you look at, oh, yeah, Lemieux and Curry, okay. Or, sorry, Gretzky and Curry. Obviously, Curry plays good. Like, for God's sakes, Dave Semenko scored, like, 30 goals with Wayne Gretzky.
Right.
But Dylan Strome was able to do it without Connor McDavid, and he's a big boy at 6'3". So I think that's exactly what Toronto is looking for, and I don't feel like they would see themselves leveraging to make sure they get him. Because there was also the argument, like you were talking before, would they move the fourth? So would they move the fourth back or forward
to make sure that they get
Strome? To make sure they get Strome. So the apparent conversation is that although if you look at NHL Central Scouting, Noah Hanifin is rated number 3, which is the American defenseman out of college. And apparently that is not who Arizona is going to go after because, I don't know, Dylan Strome, I guess, is just way too valuable of a piece. So the deal with Carolina is dependent on Dylan Strome.
See, that makes more sense to me. Like, to me, I thought it was the choice between Strome and Marner.
Right. I think that ultimately is Toronto's choice.
Oh, no, not Toronto's choice. Arizona's choice.
Oh, yeah.
In which case, you still have Hanifin, the defenseman, available on the table. But from what you're saying, it's Hanifin, a choice between Hanifin and Strome.
Right.
So if they wind up picking Hanifin, would you make the deal to get two centers? That's not as nice.
Well, I mean
it's still awesome, but as picking up a centerman and a defenseman, right? Is that where we're going in terms of why? It hinges on them getting Strome?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think ultimately it hinges on them getting Strome because that's who the Leafs want. So for them, if the Leafs get both, then if they get a defenseman and a center, the issue with Mitch Marner is he's a split center slash right winger, they're assuming because of his size. He's only 5'11". He's not a huge body. I mean, for a guy who's 5'5", I apologize, Mitch. I'm so sorry. You're like way taller than me.
We still look up to you.
But
literally.
But when you look at a guy like Strome, I think the Leafs would be more than happy, I think, with a 6'3 center. So it's kind of filling the voids that you need. So it's like, why not move these pieces? But even to your point, who cares if you get Strome and Marner? Like, if I have the choice of Strome and Hanifin, I'm taking Strome and Marner. Because Hanifin fits all the builds of, like, the defenseman, to me, that you could miss on because you draft him. Because offensively, his numbers aren't fantastic.
Just stay at home.
Yeah, more essentially. So? I mean, he plays against men in college, so it's a little bit of a different game for him. But also, this is not a, you know, not to hack on any guys going to college, but you rarely ever find uber talent out of the university levels in NCAA. Funny enough, all we do is talk about Jonathan Toews, who went to college. But that's what worries me about Hanifin. And if I can draft 129-point Dylan Strome at 18 years old, 129-point Mitch Marner, I think my offense is ready to go. I'd be a lot happier in that case than with both. You know, with one in a defenseman.
Right. And so, you know, we'll definitely take a look in terms of either. But you had an opportunity to talk
with Mitch Marner, yeah.
With Mitch?
Absolutely.
How did that go?
It was fantastic. I'm writing a story about his time, well, a little bit of his time in the GTHL, and I figured it'd be interesting that a kid developed in Toronto with, you know, the greater Toronto Hockey League is potentially going to be the first pick for the Leafs in the beginning of their rebuild, and getting a chance to speak to his trainer, who actually said that he is the most talented player he's ever worked with. and the Don Mills Flyers organization has seen a lot of talent roll through their system. Hearing the guys also compare him to being this year's potential Patrick Kane and being able to speak to other people saying, oh man, the skill level on that kid, the work ethic on that kid, it's the package you're looking for regardless of size. It sounds like a fantastic fit.
It certainly does.
So yeah, I got to speak to him, gave his dad a call. Paul Marner was an absolute gem of a guy. Very, very nice. Got me in touch with Mitch and had a great conversation with him, and we'll take a little listen.
Perfect.
So, did you grow up a Leaf fan?
Yeah, you know, kind of growing up in Toronto, you know, it's hard not to be a Leaf fan.
Right, absolutely. You were raised the right way.
Exactly.
So, how would you feel if, when the Leafs go up there, your name is called and you're drafted by the Toronto Maple Leafs?
You know, there's really no words to, you know, put it on paper. It's just, you know, I'm not going to be able to say anything. You know, I'll be speechless. I'll just be happy. And, you know, it'd be a dream come true for me personally, getting drafted by my home team. And, you know, it'd be perfect too. My whole family's from Toronto. You know, they'd all be around here. And, you know, no one has to move. You know, we could just stay around. And, you know, they'd always have to watch my home games. Yeah, you know, that's a kid's dream. I think growing up in Toronto is, you know, playing for that Leafs team. And, you know, for a chance for me actually to get that, it's, you know, it'll be special. And, you know, I guess we'll see on that draft. Anything can happen. So, you know, you got to keep your options open.
You know, I've heard a number of players in the NHL and coming into the NHL stating how special it would be to play for the Leafs. And a lot of time it's just talk because it's a Toronto reporter. I didn't get that impression.
Right.
I mean, he seems like not only a special kid that would really like to play here, but I have a feeling that the Toronto fans, once they get to know who he is and see how he plays, will get to love him too.
Right. I mean, when I asked him what it'd be like to hear your name called by the Leafs, you could hear the smile through the phone. And it's funny to me because, you know, we talk to him and we treat these players like they're 27, 35-year-olds that are pros. He's 18. You know, when I was 18, me and the guys were still playing mini sticks, like, and, you know, wish we would be in the NHL. And for him, he's getting that chance and he has the opportunity to play for his favorite team growing up.
And really his favorite?
Really his favorite. I mean, even still, he wears number 93 on the London Knights.
Gee, I wonder why that number rings a bell in my noggin.
I actually asked him, and I think the Toronto sports fans will be pleasantly surprised.
You know, my brother was born in the 93, and also Doug Gilmore wore 93 for Leafs, and, you know, both those guys I look up to, and, you know, they're both, you know, inspiring guys to me.
Yep. Fan of Doug Gilmore, Toronto.
And he plays like him too?
You know what? I don't think anybody has that killer instinct. But I will say not to give him, you know, the curse.
We don't want
to
put pressure. We don't put pressure on him.
No, I think what you're comparable is that he's smaller guy.
For 5'11". In the NHL. We laugh. But yeah, he is an undersized man in the NHL.
Yeah.
But he plays with an edge.
Absolutely. And I think that's all we look for in Toronto. I mean, we're the type of town where it's not about the size of the body, it's about the size of the heart. And, you know, I've been in front of Wendell Clark, and he's a really nice guy, but I look at him, I'm like, man, you're so small. Like, he's, I think, 5'9", honestly. And I'm like, but he's a bear, because his heart's 6'8". And I think that's all that the Toronto fans are looking for, and I would be hard-pressed to believe that Mitch Marner doesn't have that, because for a guy at his size, at one point, he was only 5'5", 5'7", and he went late in the first round in the OHL draft. And when I spoke to the president of the Don Mills Flyers, he said good for London because they saw what we knew, that he was one of the most talented players. And it's so funny because you look at the disparity. Number 2 in that draft was Dylan Strome. Okay, number 19 in that draft, who was the last pick, was Mitch Marner. And they were separated by 3 points the year before they go into the NHL draft. So that's a big gap for a little guy.
To fill.
To fill. Exactly. And, you know, he pulled his weight. And I think Toronto would be lucky to have any of the three, to be honest, when you look at Strome, Hanifin, and Marner.
And they'd be supremely fortunate to have two out of the three.
Yeah, well, that's what we're open for.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it should be a very interesting summer. We're looking forward to that draft. And not to get too far ahead, we still have 2 weeks, 2 weeks of finals, both in the NHL and NBA. Looking forward to it. So thank you all. Thank you, Joe.
No problem. Thank you very much, Bob.
And for listening to our Bob and Joe podcast, have a great week. Be good, boys. Those two out of three, baby. Now don't be sad. 'Cause two out of three.